So this is the second part of this tutorial, which involves relationships between set random sets and finds. So the key aspects of this tutorial, of this part, of the second part, would relate to non-linearity features of some functionals related to random sets and their interpretation in a financial world. So let's go back to basics. So the set X, X is a random set, and its distribution is uniquely determined by the capacity functional T of K, and which provides yet another instance of the word capacity in this room. And it's more related to so-called electrostatic capacity, which another instance of this word. And so capacity is basically a general function of sets which is not necessarily additive. And so the functional T, which you see here, is not additive, it is subadditive. And there are lots of sources of such functionals, like capacity of condensators or functionals that are payoffs of conditional games, and or functionals that appear as upper envelopes of measures. So if M script is a family of measures, is a family of probability measures, or general family of measures, then such a functional is also of capacitive type. And so with such functionals, it's possible to relate an integral, which is called the Jacquet integral. And so for this, let's start with the function phi, which is so-called non-additive measure. So phi of empty set is 0, but otherwise it takes values from 0 to 1, but is not necessarily additive. And so for a function f with non-negative values, it can be extended for other functions. One defines the integral f d phi as the conventional Riemann integral of the values of phi at the level sets of f. So if phi is a measure, then this turns into the famous formula for the expectation of a non-negative random variable using the tail probabilities. So if phi is a capacity function of a random set, then phi is given by this non-empty intersection probability. And in this case, the integral f dt can be easily immediately expressed by simple Frobenius theorem as the expectation of supremum f of x. And this supremum f of x, in other words, is supremum f of xi for all xi from x. So xi is a point from x, maybe deterministic, maybe random. And this is an instance where expectation can be interchanged with supremum. This is an issue because xi may be a random point from x which yields the which maximizes the function f. But what is important, this functional f dt is a sort of integral, but it is an integral which is not additive, which is subadditive. And otherwise, it looks like expectation, apart from the additivity is lost. And at some stage, it has been realized in finance that such functionals are extremely important to measure risks, financial risks. So assume that xi is a terminal financial position. So if xi is positive, it is good, one has a gain. If xi is negative, it is a loss. And xi is a random variable. It takes values in the real line. And the aim is to find out what kind of capital one has to ensure that xi is not too bad, xi is not too negative. And this amount of capital is given by some functional of xi. And it is required by the supervisors, by market supervisors, to be set aside and reserved and freezed and taken out of operation. And then people asked, what are the sort of desirable properties of this functional R, of the risk measure? So it should be defined on LP space, and P is greater than or equal to 1, definitely. And the first property is that if I add some amount of cash to xi, then the risk should decrease by this amount of cash. So this is called cash invariance. Well, the second property has to do mono or anti-monotone, more exactly. So if eta is better than xi, then the risk of xi is higher than the risk of eta. Well, the second one is subadditivity. It says that basically if the company operates, the same company operates in two different markets, in two different parts of the market, then the total risk, if I merge them, the merge decreases the risk. So or diversification decreases the risk, in other words. And the last part is homogeneity, which might be assumed or maybe not assumed, and it guarantees that the functional R can be regarded as a norm. So it's a sort of a norm, on because it satisfies the subadditivity and homogeneity. So the what?
Subadditivity is implied by Cushing bias?
No, because this is for deterministic A. And this is for random summons. So it's a sort of function which depends on really in RD. So in a finite probability space, xi is a unit of RD. But A in this case is 1, 1, 1, 1. So we only require invariance with respect to one particular direction. So this is the difference. So the typical examples are minus expectation. So it's the easiest example, but not particularly useful. So another example is essential in finum, which is a little bit better, but it's too conservative. So in this case, the capital requirements would be extremely high, because then the risk is really the worst possible value of the random variable. Well, then we come to something which is much more useful, which is called expected shortfall. So it's a conditional expectation. So well, I'm really avoiding some complicated variants of it. Also, I assume an atomic distribution. And so in this case, we take the expectation of xi given that xi is less than alpha quantile of xi. So it's a tail expectation, normalized. So it's a conditional expectation. And another source of such integrals are Shaquet integrals for appropriate topology on omega in this case. Now, what I want to emphasize, well, there might be really not just tutorial, but really lots of lectures on these risk measures. It's a rich subject which is currently extremely active and really well used in finance. But I want really to concentrate on geometric issues. And the geometric issues start when the problem is turns into a multivariate one. And so this history is like this. Well, the risk measures were developed in the univariate framework, and then people started immediately doing the dynamical setting, so the processes. And somehow the multivariate case remained really untouched for a while, and maybe you will see why. So in this multivariate case, so the key ingredient, well, one possible way to pose this multivariate problem into mathematical perspective is to work with exchange cone model. So K is the cone which controls the exchange rates between different parts of portfolio. So imagine X is LP integrable vector in RD, so it gives gains on D assets on D currencies. So the most important case is really of D currencies, because they can be exchanged for each other without losses of deterministic rates. And so one can view it like this. So X is a point where it's a real gain of a financial institution. And K is a cone which has been translated by X, and it controls the exchanges. And so if this axis is euros and the other axis is US dollars, it gives how many euros one can get for one US dollar or otherwise. And it's essential that the cone is really, it might contain a line or it might not contain a line. If the cone contains a line, then we have the case where one doesn't pay transaction costs, where the market is frictionless. So the aim is to measure the risk of X taking K into account. So the question, in other words, what are the worst values for, what are really bad values for X? But the bad values for X cannot be, and how to compensate for these bad values. And immediately posing this question leads to the next conclusion. If one wants to compensate for a bad value of X, then this compensation may be achieved in different ways. Like, one might reserve some capital in euros, which means I need to go along this line, or it is possible to reserve some capital in dollars and set aside. And so this may be really the ways to compensate for possible eventual losses is not unique. There are lots of ways to do it. And this immediately brings the set, random sets arguments in play. So the first step is to start with a set valued portfolio. So look at the sum of X plus K and consider the random set, and which might not be a point plus con type, it might be of any of many different types, like transactions up to a certain amount are allowed and then nothing is allowed, or any possible variants of this. And so portfolio is then a random closed convex set such that X equals to X plus the minus quadrant. So in this case one talks about the lower set. So with each point X, with each point from this set, we also have inside all points which lie below it, or left to it. And the risk is something opposite. Risk is an upper set. So let's look at this picture. So that X is a gain, and X plus K is a portfolio, and the risk is a family of capital requirements. So, like, for instance, I can take a point from there and say, reserve these amounts. But this would be too much. So the agent doesn't want to reserve this amount. The agent might reserve these amounts or that amounts. But what is important, zero is there. So in this case, the agent does not need to reserve anything. And in this case, the position is said to be acceptable. Moreover, the agent is allowed to go in a negative direction, and this would result in the release of capital. So one can take out of operation one can pay some dollars and euros to shareholders. Well, so, and the largest set means lower risk. So one has to be careful about this larger-smaller relationship. So, portfolio is acceptable if there is selection from X. Remember, X belongs to X capital, Xi belongs to X capital, means that they both can be realized in the same probability space, so that Xi is a part of X. And so, in other words, this means that there exists a transfer, a terminal time, so that makes all lines acceptable. So I'm talking about one time period K. So we have time 0 and time T. So the initial time and the terminal time. So at initial time, what happens in the future is random. So one simply possesses or somehow works with a distribution, and based on this distribution says that time 0 to cover for the future. For the future losses, one has to reserve such and such amount of money. Well, and at this point, one can maybe argue what really happens. Xi must belong to X and should have all acceptable components. Maybe simply why not to treat all coordinates separately, and why not to split it into just product of several univariate problems. And the reason why it is not possible is seen from the following series of pictures. So imagine we have terminal situation like this after time t. So it's a terminal position. Well, in this case no transfers are needed, so X is good. But if the terminal position would be like this, then maybe one has to shift, one had to exchange the currencies and move from X somewhere over there. And this depends on the really interplay between the coordinates of X and as well at the angle which this access forms with coordinate lines. So it depends on the random cone, which eventually come up. Or if in this case, well, obviously the way is to move to change downwards. So this forms a sort of the rule. So the agent says, well, I would find a selection of my portfolio. So in case the dollars will take, I will have loss in dollars, I will transfer in euros. In case I would have loss in euros, I will transfer in dollars. But obviously this all then is under complicating facts that the exchange rates are running. Well, so let's look at a simple example. So X is a bivariate normal, so means correlation, and we have transaction free case, efficient market without efficient friction. So the exchange rate is 1.5, terminal rate is log normal, and I'm taking expected shortfall. Remember, this is the expectation of the tail, conditional expectation on the tail as a risk measure. So the picture is like this. So X is somewhere on this line, so it's a position, and then I can move on this line downwards, so up or left, or on the right, doing exchanges which are free from extra costs. And so in case of no transfers, the initial capital in the first currency is 2. Well, if I will do terminal transfer, if I decide, I will always do transfer to the first currency. At the end, it is less, and if I always decide, I will transfer to the second currency, it is comparable but similar. And for a cleverer transfer, we get the optimal risk. And what is the cleverer transfer in this case? So if I am somewhere here, where to go along this line to really to be in the best possible position? And one doesn't really need much to think about it to realize the cleverer transfer is a projection of the origin onto the line. So, well, it's given by this projection formula. Well, so now this is the main idea. So let's move a little bit one step further. And I recall that Xi is a selection of X if Xi belongs to X almost surely. And I assume that X contains at least one integrable selection. So the series is not empty. So we look at the tuple of univariate risks, so which will be used to assess each coordinate separately. So the random set is acceptable if it has at least one acceptable selection. So there exists Xi, so that the vector build of the risks of the components of Xi is less than zero in the coordinate-wise ordering. So negative risk is always really the right thing. And the selection risk measure is a topological closure of all possible shifts that make it acceptable. Now deterministic shifts. So here this Cash invariance is important, because it really aims, it makes it possible to recover the set from risks. So on the picture it looks like this. So we have the set with portfolio selection there, and evaluate the risk of the selection, for instance this point, and then build the whole quadrant on top of this point and take the unions and eventually the closure. So this is, well, there are lots of questions. For instance, is the closure really needed? Is it, well, what really happens with this set, how to calculate, and what are the properties? And, well, the theorem about this says that the so-defined risk measure, which has set values, takes values in the space of sets, is cash invariant. All right, so it's monotone. So if Y has more options than X, then the risk of Y will, the set corresponding to the risk of Y will be larger, so the risk will be smaller. So homogeneity and superadditivity for inclusion, which because of interpretation, larger set lower risk, means subadditivity of risk. So it's a diversification advantage. So one point which is here, well, there are, on the way, there are quite some pitfalls. even like a simple statement, law invariant. The law invariant means that if two sets have the same distribution, then they should one should get the same values for the risk mirror. Which really strange, maybe strange, looks strangely. If two random variables have the same distribution, the expectations are the same. But it's not automatic in this case, because it can be violated, and because for it's well known that two random sets might have completely different families of selections. Over, despite the fact that they are identically distributed. So the selections involve extra randomness, and this is influenced by the richness of the probability space, for instance, and the sigma algebra. But so here, well, one else, even for such simple things, one needs an extra argument. Like, so here, this is the key argument, which says that if I take conditional expectation, then the risk is diminished by taking conditional expectation. And so then when comes the convexity comes into the play, and then finally followed by the theorem that the families of natural selections of X, which don't involve any extra randomness, which are measurable with respect to the own sigma algebra generated by X, and the same of Y can say it. So it's by far not immediate. Well, let's look at a simple example. So I mentioned the selection expectation last time in the first lecture, so let's recall it. So the expectation of X is the closure of the expectations of all integrable selections. So this is an example of set valued risk measure, as long as I will take the negative of the selection expectation. So the closure is not needed if X is integrally bounded. So if it lies inside a ball with integrable radius. And let's now look venture a little bit into direction what it might be used for. So how to make capital reserve. So, well, we calculate the value of the risk measure of X plus K. But now, this, what one would require in the to reserve for the future. But this has to be produced at time zero. So like the regulator says, please set aside, say, 100 K dollars and 50 K euros. But this should be bought at time zero, at exchange rates which are prevalent at time zero on the market. So this corresponds to, geometrically, this corresponds to adding the cone at time zero reflected, because one has to reflect the direction. And this is the family of possible capital requirements. So no financial talk was probably complete without explaining how to earn infinite amount of money. And so here's an example. So let's look at two currencies. So exchange rate pi at time 1, normally distributed, no transaction costs. Well, it can be modified for transaction costs, but it's not as important. So position at time 1 is 0, 0. So I don't have I don't have anything to do. So I'm not doing nothing. So like the agent is doing nothing. So, but this 0, 0 can be exchanged for another position, like minus a pi a. Like, I take a loan of a euros and pay for this pi times a dollars. So this is 0 as well. It's also 0. So it's reachable from 0, 0 without any costs. Now let's calculate the risk of minus a pi a. The risk of minus turns into the plus, so minus is a bad thing to have, so it has a high risk, positive risk, so the risk is A. So here A is a factor which goes to the front, R of pi. Pi is a non-negative random variable, so its risk is a negative number, R of pi is zero. So we have this situation. Now we need to reserve to buy this amount of dollars and euros at time zero. And imagine at time zero the exchange rate is pi naught. So then I need to get A in dollars, for instance, pi naught times A dollars plus this amount of dollars. Take A out. We have pi naught plus R of pi. Now, as long as if pi naught is small enough, then pi naught plus R of pi is less than zero because R of pi is negative. So then drive A up, and I'm getting an arbitrary negative number as negative as I want, which means in this operation at time zero, one can release as much capital as one wants and invest it somewhere and arrive at position 0,0 afterwards. So it's completely strange because in this case there is no financial arbitrage. The name of financial arbitrage has to do with existence of the Martingale measure. So the Martingale, it is a standard log-normal model, this is Black-Scholes model, it is arbitrage-free. So somehow there is a new phenomenon of so-called risk arbitrage, which appears only in the multivariate setting. So, this is due to be well understood and well perceived. Well, the family and clearly calculation, then comes the question of calculation. And this is by far not easy because the family of all selections is immense. And so one record the exact computation for this requires multi-criterial optimization algorithm. So it's a convex optimization with multi-criterial objectives. And so let's be modest, and there are some groups of people who are really good in doing this, but I'm modestly explaining only the bounds for the selection risk measure, like the upper bound. The upper bound is obtained by, if I take selections psi 1, psi n, calculate the risks, it's fine, and take the convex hull of the union. So this is the subset of the result, because if one wants to get a finer approximation, one needs to take more size. So the key mathematical background, it is allowed to take the convex hull, because the result is convex. Well, for the lower bound, is really inherently related to so-called dual representation of the univariate risk measures. Remember, R of psi is a sort of convex function. And it is well known, a convex function can always obtain as supremum of some linear functions. So this is exactly what happens here. So what one says on the right-hand side, under supremum, is a linear function of psi. And the slope of this linear function is controlled by a family of random variables, zetas. So it's a really standard representation of convex function, supremum of linear. And alternative expression can be written in terms of in set weighted language by taking the half line, multiply it with zeta, dividing by zeta, and taking the intersection. So intersection of such half lines is supremum of numbers. But it opens immediately the door to the set valued case, because now I want to create this to obtain this set as intersection of half spaces. And here is it. Well, so one gets lower bound. And the natural, well, I can show the one picture what happens. So this is the normal sample. So here the true value obtained by really painful computations, and here are two bounds, which are not as tight, but still provide some. Well, but as long as one has such a representation of intersection of half planes, half spaces, so the natural question is really this representation exact? So is it only bound, or it is exact way to get the set? For a convex set, one really should expect that it is obtained as intersection of half spaces. But it's by far non-trivial question. Well, So, in the univariate case, such results are based on the application of bipolar theorem. So the second polar set, second dual set, is the original one if the set is convex and so-called weak star closed. So the weak star convergence is like in L infinity. In LP, it's like LP convergence. It's like weak convergence. It's the same. And for the L infinity, it amounts to convergent probability and uniform boundedness. So this is this result says that if a functional is subadditive, homogeneous, Cash invariant, and weak star continuous, then it has such a representation. So this is a classical result by Delbayen and by now maybe referenced, I think, about 10,000 times. Well, now what to do with sets? So the natural logic says one has to somehow to get numbers related to sets and to linearize the space of sets. And this is usually done by taking support function. Support function in direction u is supreme of ux over x and x. The sum of sets are sum of support functions, but this one can be infinite. And it can be really easily infinite, so maybe I go back at this point. I think it's a good point to show here. Yeah. Like in this case, the support function is finite only in this direction. And if now exchange rate is random, then it's never finite with probability 1. So there is no really way to characterize such things using support function. So the idea is to use random arguments of the support function. So it has to be evaluated in good directions. So in a sense, one has to do some analysis for functions of random arguments. And now comes a couple of transparencies, maybe too much, months. And so in a sense, I'm looking at directions where support function is finite. This is a random set on the sphere, or random cone in RG, but if normalized, it is a random set on the sphere. And such functions form the family of Lipschitz functions with that map L naught all elements of this random set with L infinity norm to LP. And they are Lipschitz, one has linear functionals, and the rest is really accomplished by some functionalness results. Because really, fortunately, the weak star convergence of Lipschitz spaces is characterized. The weak convergence of Lipschitz spaces is not characterized so far at all. So it's not known what is the dual space by Lipschitz space. And so maybe I will skip it, and if rho has the Fatou property, which means it's a sort of weak star continuity. If xn weak star converges to x, then the Lim sup in a set sense must be subset of the original one. Then one has this dual representation. And these are exactly half spaces whose direction is controlled by some subset of LQ. But just to compare, to perceive what is involved, let's look at, this is Fatou lemma, essentially. And for the standard expectation, for the Aumann integral, introduced in 65, Schmeidler proved that if xn is uniformly bounded, then Lim sup of this expectation is a subset of expectation of Lim sup. So it implies the closeness, but if one wants to do it for unbounded sets, which is our case, then It's by really delicate result by Balder. He has quite some years afterwards. But we want to do it for non-linear functionals, so which makes it seriously different. But still, Fatou property holds, and one has Fatou lemma in quite some number of cases. Well, and so in all these cases, the value of the risk measure is closed. So at this point, I think I will slightly shift the topic and will lighten up the presentation as well. And namely, I will talk about some financial networks. So let's start with, but still the aims will be really close to the measuring of risk. So let's look at this really simple hypothetical network. And maybe at some stage during other talks, I start speculating what might be the common and different between such networks, financial networks, and mobile networks, or telecommunication networks. Well, obviously the geographical positions are not important. So locations are not essential. But still the roles of the players may be quite different. It's like base stations and the customers. Well, like in this case, the holding is a company which may be regarded as a station, maybe. It's pure speculation. And because it holds the positive part of the assets of the daughter companies. So the daughter company might go bankrupt, but the holding will not feel it. Well, it's simply it will not become bankrupt because it holds the positive part of the asset. So maybe the rest is a sort of, so somehow it... One has really non-equal relationship, non-equal roles in the network. So here's an example of the Allianz Group network. So this is a seriously big network, which is, well, graphically simple. There are simply some lines, depending on the place and depending on the type of business. But Allianz is a big insurance company. It's a seriously big organization. Well, and so what does a regulator aims to do for this case? So they look at all possible of all parts of the group and want to impose some capital restrictions on these parts. Like the regulator says, well, the investment part must hold such and such and such amount of money in reserve. Or each part which makes together Allianz Group has to set aside some reserves. Now the question is how to determine these amounts. And so far, in most cases, the regulator applies a standalone approach. So the standalone approach considers, or granular approach, considers each agent separately and calculates. It has some terminal position, CI. It calculates a risk associated with CI and asks to reserve corresponding amount of capital. So the risk measure in the European Union, mostly people use mostly quantiles, so-called value at risk. In Switzerland, one is more advanced to use expected shortfall, which is more conservative and more sensitive to possible tails. And this is really the major part. So in a sense, it reminds what I told you before. So one has a single agent with portfolio composed of different currencies. So here one has a group that is composed of the agents. But in many cases, a great simplification is that currently I impose that the currency is the same. So it will simplify the life greatly, but might not be the case. Well, there is currently in the literature another word floating, which is called systemic risk. So systemic risk for a network describes the following situation. Because in a network where the agents are interconnected, a possible default of a single one might result in problems for other agents. So you can maybe interpret it in the sense of some mobile of telecommunication networks. And that's why if one really wants to determine the capital necessary to secure the whole network, one has to take into account. So it's really complicated thing, and it's not by far not well understood. So there are some initial papers on systemic risk, and today there was a paper on Archive which relates the systemic risk with some curvatures of networks. So it might have some connections to some far-reaching connections to other types of networks. But I'm not going to talk about systemic risk. It's by far not clear. So instead, I will talk about groups. So in the group, some may voluntarily or maybe forced to commit themselves to help other members of the group. Well, and this should decrease to the necessary capital, to decrease necessary capital reserves. Like, I gave this example yesterday, so now let me repeat it. So there are two agents, A and B, and the agents wants to minimize its reserves and so conclude some agreements. And if some of them will be in distress, then the other agent would help, if it can. So the family of allowed transactions is the family of two numbers. What agent one promises to, we would have after transfers, and what agent two would have after transfers. So we are again in a situation which is similar to one described in the first part of the talk. Well, to the first part of the talk today, which aims to assess the risk of some random set. So, and despite the network is not geometric, it's described by a geometric object. So imagine G agents operate with the same currents, same terminal positions as C1, CD, and all risks are assessed by the same coherent risk measure. And what currently, and well, because in all these regulatory issues, apart from mathematics, quite serious, and finance, politics plays also quite a serious role. And so at the moment, the trend is to somehow to decrease the capital requirements somehow, because otherwise they are too serious. And they want now to take all parts of the group together, so they form the sum. So in this case, one talks about half space. So from C, I can move as far as possible along the line which builds the half space. So it allows to move from C to C plus eta, where sum of etas is not larger than zero. Well, so this is a sort of really is called important. So, and this was still analyzed by many people, and who in a series of papers of different authors came to the conclusion that the total required capital is R, it's less than the standalone, which is easy, and there exists best transfers, which is not as easy, and that each of the transfers can be represented as a monotonic function on the total position. But this only concerns the case of unrestricted transfers. Well, with our tools, most of these results are really nearly immediate, because one can use the closeness of the risk measure generated by the half space random set. And what comes on as a new feature are possible restrictions on transfers. Because if one wants to move as far as possible on this half on this line which bounds the half plane, well, these transfers may not be feasible in the end, because nobody can transfer more than one ohms. And so the ELSA capital available for transfers normally is not available as cash. So for agent A to transfer something to B, he doesn't have $1 million in cash to transfer it. One has to get a loan for this amount using own assets as a security. And then the money is available, becomes available for transfers. And the interest on this loan depend on the current position of the agent. So it's so-called fungibility constraints. So if the position is really weaky, then one really is not allowed to. One will get a loan at good terms. Well, so let's look at simple, a trivialized example, which is called no transfers to bankruptcy. So terminal capital for two agents. So if C1, C2 is terminal capital, transfers up to that point are allowed, and all whatever is worse. But obviously nobody would go towards inside of X. So useful from financial viewpoint. But if one agent is in negative position, like the first one, then the second one can help him up to amount of available cash. And so then we have a random set of attainable positions for the group. And again, we take the risk measure of this set, try to add some capital A to the position, and then with the aim to find the smallest possible total capital, which still guarantees that zero is inside, so that the total position is acceptable. So, well, the theorem in film is achieved. It's not much, but something which is still needs some work and time. There are more questions which, for instance, ask how to ensure that none of the agents need to reserve more than it would have done in a standalone approach. So this somehow guarantees that the agents will not need to be forced to commit themselves for such things. It's in economic side, they exhibit so cooperative behavior. ELSA, in which case the optimal transfers are realized as monotonic function of X with respect to set inclusion. So these are some issues which relate to networks, but there are some other issues which are related to networks, and mostly about equilibrium of financial networks and given some particular cash flows. Well, so to explain maybe to give a quick summary of what was there. So one, in telecommunication applications, one somehow got used to deal with stationary case. So one has networks which are space invariant, or maybe, well, obviously they are not completely homogeneous, but sort of they really live everywhere in all parts of the plane or in the space. But here the main emphasis is really on non-stationary sets, and mostly on the sets which are, say, called lower sets. So there is something on there is a boundary, and all points worse than this boundary are belong to the set. And high dimensionality is also quite natural here, because all financial settings really exhibit large amount of players. And the main tools are selections and support functions for this. And one would welcome the model or inference tools and efficient computation algorithms. This is by far, many of these questions are unclear so far. So this is the So there are some, today I mostly talked about the second paper, and the work on networks is something that isn't currently in progress, and relatively slow because it's of lots of the wish to incorporate lots of real financial realities into to explain them. Well, so this is it. Thank you for attention.
Thank you. We have time for questions. Yes.
You mentioned that when you have two organizations, yeah, you can often get this, it's possible to derive these risk arbitrage that you get in all three cases.
For two organizations operate on the same currency node.
If they operate in the same currency
node, no. But if the currencies are different, obviously the conditions for the risk arbitrage are really seriously severe. This imagine pi is 1.5. And the risk of pi will be something around 1.5, so it will be maybe minus 1.7 or whatever. So one has to, in this case, to get a really special pi knot. So it really it's more modeling issue. So the risk arbitrage is something that is really has to be dealt with the regulator, because the regulator, so the agent presents to a regulator a model. So, for instance, the agent says, "I assume such and such distribution for my ultimate position, and this distribution is affected by such and such factors like interest rates or maybe some global factors." So, the agent, the regulator, checks the model and then checks the calculation. So, this is a part of the modeling. Is this a modeling fault? So this is the duty of regulator to see it's not really the right model for the future, because the right model for the future pi must involve pi naught. So if the future pi is pi naught times something, this will not be the case.
But does this suggest that if you're a multi-currency company, there's value in creating different subsidiaries, and then you can start playing different
games? So in multi-currencies, it's really there are lots of questions like what is the base currency to do it, and so currently what is allowed is to evaluate the future losses in any currency, like one can do euros, one can do dollars, one can evaluate them in the portfolio of currency, one can create some kind of virtual currency for this. And this again opens lots of possibilities to choose for the agent to somehow to exploit this, but it's not as geometric as the rest, so I didn't talk about this.
You have a question up there?
What are the main sources of randomness of these random sets? You were mentioning
so exchange rates control the geometry basically, and so for the position itself, it's the operational risks. There are development of the shares.
Not
estimate, to model the set. People don't estimate the sets in this case; they model them.
Modeling requires some. You were using log-norm random.
Historical basis, some on prescribed models. So I might be wrong with the number, but as far as I remember, the standard operational model involves about 100 parameters, which are all possible market indices, and which I can't interest rates sometimes, the inflation indices, and it's not really our duty in this case, I would say.
This formalism mechanism for risk measure might have some links with what people were doing in the Max Plus again, as you mentioned yesterday mm-hmm. already. And people studied when you just have the monotonicity and the homogeneity, and there were it was called topical functions, and there were very nice representations in terms of min max plus function in the 90s of this.
Without subadditivity.
Without subadditivity, yeah. So it's a big, much bigger class, but there was a representation which might be linked to the beautiful one that you mentioned, which is a bigger class, so you put less. And so you had, people had, there was a theorem by Kolokoltsov to represent all topical functions as min-max plus functions. So you had only max functions, I suppose.
This is the, well. I would expect if such a representation. Well, so in this case, so people really univariate case, non-geometric case, should
for vectors
as well.
Yeah, yeah. Here, I guess you have this selection.
Yeah.
So you
might. Yeah, but it's also, but it's basically goes down to vectors.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you very much.